go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are joined today, as always, by our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Tristan McNeil, nicknames TBA.
Should be easy for this one, right?
Yeah, it should be easy. We'll have a lot of choices.
Yeah, so many things to choose from in this one, because today we're going to talk about, well, I'll tell you, the article that we're following, I guess, maybe, from Road and Track is called 10 Surprisingly Affordable 1990s Dream Cars. Now, this touches on a lot of things that we love here on the show.
Right, and a lot of stuff that you, ladies and gentlemen, have wrote in and asked us to look at in the past. So we want to give a big shout-out to the author of this, a fellow named Chris Perkins.
Yeah, and, of course, I said this touches on several things. Of course, affordable is probably number one, right?
That's a big caveat.
Affordable is number one, but you got to also think about every word in this title, because 1990s, okay, that's one category right there.
Sure.
Affordable's one category. Dream cars, that's the key here, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe,
that's the kicker.
Back in 1990, there were a lot of cars that were still kind of unattainable for a lot of us. You know, they were something that were just out of reach because of the cost. And I've got, in many cases, several examples of, you know, a ballpark MSRP for the vehicle, you know, around what it cost during the 1990s. And maybe sometimes it's a specific year. Where I tried to find, you know, like, since a production model ran from, you know, 1990 to 2000, I just went right with the median at 1995 and gave you the MSRP for that. But the idea here is that now, in 2017, the prices of these cars that were once seemed unattainable are now attainable.
Okay.
For most, you know. I mean, it's still a toy. It's still going to be something that, you know, you're... It, probably not your daily driver, but something that, you know, you drive on the weekends, maybe. It's something that, maybe not a project car, but a driver, you know, something you can use and have fun with.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have this list we'll walk through, and we want you to drop by our Facebook and our Twitter, and our email, and let us know what you would add to this list. Because my favorite part about these, Scott, is when people come in and say, also, I think this should be on this list.
Well, usually it's this. It's, I can't believe you didn't include, and then
right,
it's followed
right
by whatever it was, right? So
yeah,
this list has 10, and I'll be honest with you, this is a pretty good list of 10. Now, I know
this is
there,
pretty good.
There are a lot of them out there that I'm sure that have just, you know, they're lost to time in my memory. But I can really only think about maybe one more that I would add. But again, they have to be from the 1990s. They have to be a dream car from then,
and they have to be affordable,
and affordable now,
right.
Affordable now. So that's the key. And, you know, let's just start off by saying, sure, an Acura NSX would be great for, you know, a lot of people, and I would love one myself.
Sure,
but they're still pretty expensive.
That is completely true.
And
my
there's
friend.
Other cars that have kind of gained in popularity, which means they gain in value as well, like the Toyota Supra of the 1990s, which is an incredible vehicle. Which you know, a lot of people, again, a dream car. They were expensive then. They remained expensive for a while. Then they became affordable. Now they're getting expensive again because collectors and people are kind of taking interest in them again. So the Supra is probably off the list again. So that's another example. Like, you know, maybe you're looking at the ones that are kind of an undiscovered gem. You
yeah.
know, something that, that you know about that not a lot of other people have really, you know, given much care about in the last, 25, 27 years.
So let's jump right in, shall we?
Yes.
All right.
No particular order.
No particular order. Thank you for saying that. That is absolutely true. First up, the Chevrolet Corvette C5.
Yeah, specifically the C5. Now, this is the production model years, actually kind of the trail end of the 1990s, from about 1997 till about 2004. So we're talking about the early C5s.
Yeah, for around 15 large, you can get your hands on this car with some pretty compelling stats.
And 15,000?
Yeah, 15.
That's amazing.
That's amazing, especially, you know, when you consider that these are beautiful vehicles. There's no two ways about it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have high performance as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's right. They've got, 350 horsepower, 175 mile per hour top end on these on these vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Again, these cars in 1999, so the very end of the 1990s production, so 1999, they were ballpark right around, let's say, anywhere between $40,000 and $46,000. So they were still pricey, expensive, affordable, because I think they called these the blue-collar supercar
uh-huh.
in the past. You know,
I've
it's kind of
that,
the, like,
yeah.
AKA blue-collar supercar. They've got expensive insurance, if you want to look at it that way. I mean, even if you're going to buy one now for $15,000, you're probably going to pay a lot for insurance, especially if you're a younger driver. So maintenance isn't going to be quite as expensive as some of the other cars we're going to talk about. And,
right.
And that's a theme that's going to come up, too, by the way, maintenance.
Cost of ownership,
oh,
yeah.
Cost of ownership, yeah, for a lot of the cars. Now, remember the this is, again, off-topic already. First one on the list, and we're off-topic. Remember how we often talk about, or we used to talk about, the Ferrari, the 308?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, how maintenance is the real killer on it. You could buy one for a reasonable price.
Sure,
and then,
sure.
And then later, a listener wrote in and said, you might want to check on the value of those because it went up by three times. So, you know, that's kind of the lesson learned, I guess, is that, you know, they've increased in value and without us knowing. That happens a lot. And a few of them that I looked up to kind of add to this list, you know, at the end.
Sure.
But I like to add a few
here and
there in my own picks. I was surprised at the value. They either retained value or went up in value. And so that's why my picks didn't make this list, really.
You got priced out.
I did get priced out.
You got priced out of affordable 1990s dream cars.
I know it. How sad is that? That's 27 years later, and I'm still thinking, that's a little too much. A little too much.
You know, one that really surprised me is the next on the list.
Oh, yeah.
I was not expecting to see an Aston Martin on this list, a DB7. But it turns out that if you are a talented car sleuth, if you are a automotive PI, you can find a DB7 for under $40,000.
Under $40,000. Now, that sounds like still like a lot of money, right?
But it is a lot of money.
Well, it is a lot of money, but you got to remember, the price of these things when they were brand new was somewhere around $145,000. Now, that's in the late 1990s. So if you were to do the inflation calculator thing and extrapolate that to 2017...
Yeah.
That comes out to somewhere around $212,000.
So, gotcha.
In 2017 dollars. Now, again, and if you're buying it for under $40,000 today, that's relative. I mean, that's telling you that it's a $212,000 valued car at $40,000. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right way to look at it because, you know, age, depreciation, that kind of thing happens as well. Obviously, depreciation. They debuted in 1994, but by 1999, so 1999 is the year to look for in this because that year, they had a V12.
Yes, yeah, that year they had a V12. But the straight six will get it done.
Yeah, well, that's true. There was a straight six that was prior to that. It was a 355 horsepower straight six, I think. The V12 power advantage, I think this article says that it came around in the 2000 model year, but I've looked this up elsewhere because I do that. I look up the other stuff.
Yeah.
And,
trust but verify.
Yeah, that's right. I verified it, and it seems like 1999 was the year that that the V12 appeared. Some strange things about this. Of course, this is the car of choice of James Bond. Right?
Yes, yeah,
Aston
that's
Martin.
True.
So that's something.
True.
You get the name for it, right? It's kind of. I mean, it's the styling of this one. I'll tell you, this is probably one of my least favorite cars on this list. Really, I mean, honestly, to look at it, and it's one of the more expensive ones too.
Yeah.
I'm an Aston Martin fan. I'm just not crazy about it. It's just not a good-looking car to me. It doesn't look like... I think there were other Aston Martins that were better-looking.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are other cars on this list that are better-looking for less money.
There's, you know, the thing about the DB7 is that it has a sort of sedate design. Other than the air intakes there at the at the back of the front wheels, it looks like it's built to be a sedan, and they forgot to add the back doors.
There's probably a good reason behind this. Now, this is what this becomes a production model when Jaguar was owned by Ford Motor Company. And if you look at it, you'll clearly see Ford lines within this. And it also, this is another thing that it was kind of like a spin-off, I guess, or it was a design maybe. That's not the right way to say it. It was a design that was rejected by Jaguar when they were thinking of creating the vehicle that they called the XK8. And the XK8 is a pretty remarkable car, too. But and I'm not saying this isn't a remarkable vehicle. It's just it has styling that just doesn't, to me, it doesn't scream Aston Martin, really.
I see what you're saying. I think that it's pretty mild, but I'm also I'm an Aston Martin fan, but... yeah, this one looks a little bit more...
Well...
Yeah, it looks a little more Ford,
well,
doesn't it?
Jaguar passed on it. We'll just say that.
Okay.
We'll say that.
All right.
And so they passed on it, but it is a pretty remarkable vehicle because it does go... It has 185 mile per hour top speed. 0 to 60 is relatively quick for the time, around 5.3 seconds. It's not a bad car. It's just not, to me, it's not a great car. I mean, the V12, that's a 6-liter, 420 horsepower engine, very strong. Mm-hmm. You can get a 6-speed manual or a 5-speed automatic. And that was in, again, just the 1999, so we're catching the very end of the 1990s in this one, but, I guess it'd be cool to say that you own an Aston Martin for $40,000 or less. That would be cool.
But I would leave that part out. I would just say I have an Aston Martin.
Well, of course you would. You're not one to, you know, promote prices on things either. I mean, not a lot of people do, really. Well, no, some people do.
I would just be being disingenuous. I would also need to get a really nice tux and just wear it all the time.
Always have a martini in your hand.
You know, this is, okay, this is a side note, but I promise it will be brief and I will not derail us too far.
You know what? You don't need to say that to me because I do that to us all the time.
Oh, okay. So I read this really interesting article where someone did the math of James Bond drinking, mm-hmm. and apparently he was a raging alcoholic and would have died because, you know, they took just the course of the films, so not the novels.
Yeah.
And they, you know, put a tick mark every time that he had a drink.
Yeah.
And they were like, this guy is blind drunk about 40 minutes into every film.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, he should be. He should be. And he's also in these incredible car chase scenes, right?
Right. He's in incredible car chase scenes doing acts of physical daring do and then taking really difficult shots with firearms.
So in reality, he'd be stumbling around, wouldn't be able to hit the side of a barn.
Yeah.
Couldn't probably drive anywhere without smashing into a wall.
Yeah. He would have trouble putting on clothes. but I thought it was a really interesting article, and I'll post it if I can dig it up. I'll put it on our Twitter.
Well, I mean, that's what he's known for, martinis. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, the Bond women.
Yes.
You know, of course, coolness, maybe that, you're mm-hmm. right, but the Aston Martin goes along with that coolness. I mean, he always had an Aston Martin.
I mean, I think James Bond is one of the best things ever happened to Aston Martin.
Yeah, well, he is, and that's the thing is that, you know, there's some Aston Martins that, you know, have become classics, and, I mean, look at the DB4 GT Zagato models. There were 19 of those made, and those are back in the 1960s, early 1960s. Mm-hmm. Those still sell, they auction now. For anywhere between $1.3 and I think it's $2.5 million.
Oh,
so
that's it. Huh?
Well, a significant step up from you know this $40,000 DB7, and I guess maybe that's what I'm seeing is that I'm comparing the $2.5 million Aston Martins to the to the $35,000 Aston Martins, and that's probably my issue.
I'd still drive a DB7 though. They seem like they're good cars. It's just. I would be a little concerned about maintenance.
Well, maintenance would be an issue too, sure, of course. But, you know, I'm sure you don't pull into an Aston Martin dealership and ask for an oil change and they tell you it's, you know, 1995. I don't think that's the case.
Well, do you have the coupon?
Aston Martin owners don't cut coupons, Ben.
Do you know? Lies, Scott.
Yeah.
Lies. Do you know how many people, apparently there's a problem, there are a lot of people who will cut out like one of those paper coupons for one oil place and then take it to the other oil places and be like, I know this is expired and this is for a Jiffy Lube and you're an Express Lube or whatever, but don't you want my business?
Wow.
And people will accept it. Number three, this is an interesting one. The Nissan 300ZX twin turbo.
Yeah.
The first thing. Okay, so these are great. Everybody wants to know the price. You can get one in good condition for around $20,000. I gotta say, this has always been weird to me. And maybe you can give me your thoughts on this, ladies and gentlemen. The Nissan 300ZX, God love it. The front of it looks like a Saturn.
You don't like it?
I didn't say I didn't like it. I used to own a Saturn. I had two Saturns, in fact.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I hadn't really looked at it that way until just now, and looking at the photo, I see exactly what you mean. Ben, according to some reports, they say that this car was designed by supercomputers back in the 1990s.
By 1990s, supercomputers, AI designed car coming to you.
Probably the size of a room, you know, like one of those like supercomputers, right?
They have a guy who just changes tubes.
Yeah. That's probably what it was. I mean,
well,
but
this is a good car.
It is. And we've done an entire Z car episode.
Yep.
And I don't know how much we focused on this model, the Z32 in particular. This is the Fair Lady Z32, if you want to call it that as well. Mm-hmm. The twin turbo specifically. And, of course, production went on longer than just the 1990s because here in the United States, it went through the 1990s. In Japan, it was a little bit longer because it started in 1989 and went all the way through 2000. In the United States, We only saw this twin-turbo 300ZX from about 1990 until 1996. The price when new was somewhere around the $40,000 range. I'm just taking a median age here. So
right.
1996, I believe, is the year that I selected. That's the equivalent of about $62,000 in 2017 dollars. And so it's an expensive car, but as you said, Ben, you can pick one up for around $20,000. And, this is one that you will occasionally see in traffic. They're still around.
Yeah, they're still around. And the one that we're talking about, the one that the author uses as an example for affordability, it's about $19,000 for a 1991 model with just under 50,000 miles on it. And that's not bad at all.
No. And it was a car that a lot of people really were seeking at the time. I mean, a lot of people wanted this, but here's the other side of the coin is that right around that time is when the trend towards, people wanting SUVs, wanting bigger vehicles, wanting, not a minivan, but something that was a little, not a truck, but, they wanted the SUV. The crossovers
right.
weren't a thing yet
at
that time. But the move to get away from, these smaller import sports cars
mm-hmm.
was already it was on its way. It was happening.
It was in the air.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, there's still a market for it. It's just the market wasn't quite as big.
Yes.
And so that's what happened. So the sales started to decline, and Nissan took away the Z car for a couple of years until we got it back in 2002 here in the United States with the 350Z.
And our next addition to this list, let's set it up. The author may have made a little bit of bad blood with my co-host Scott because he says this car probably isn't a good idea. But what car is it?
Oh.
We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Scott, you're shaking your head in consternation during the ad break.
I would say that it's always a good time to own a Lotus.
A Lotus.
Honestly, yeah. Anytime you can get your hands on a Lotus car and it's affordable, if this is affordable to you,
yeah.
get it.
I just felt the chill in the room when we went to this one
yeah.
because the author does say buying an older Lotus Esprit probably isn't a good idea, but there's really nothing else like it.
Well, the problem is, of course, as we've said in a couple of other instances, maintenance. Maintenance is an issue because you do have to go to a dealership that will handle Lotus maintenance if you're not capable of doing that type of thing on your own. And a lot of people aren't capable of doing some major things on their own. Minor things,
right, sure.
But the major stuff, sure, you still have to go there, and you're going to pay quite a bit of money for parts and labor and things like that, as we all understand. Now, this is a car that came around in 1976, but it was made and manufactured all through the 1990s, and it didn't end production until about 2004. And if you wanted to get a new one of these in the 1990s, I just tried to take a sampling of prices from the 1990s, and I found that the prices ranged anywhere from $70,000 to $90,000 throughout the 1990s, and production was relatively low. I think they only built a little less than 11,000 of these total,
mm-hmm.
And throughout that whole production run. If you're going to spend $70,000 to $90,000 back then,
mm-hmm.
it was equivalent to $130,000 to $168,000 now.
Yes.
And then now we're seeing the prices dropped all the way down to between $20,000 and $30,000 for a decent example of these.
Yeah, and As you pointed out, when we factor in the cost of maintenance with a car that age, no matter how well you maintain the schedule, right?
Mm-hmm.
The maintenance schedule, the odds are that there are going to be a couple of major obstacles
sure.
that come along.
Yeah.
And so when that happens, I would say they say budget a lot for maintenance. I would say consider the cost of this just like over the lifetime. Probably add another $10,000 on
consider
there.
The cost of not owning this car. I mean, what does that do to your soul, really? I mean, if you knew it was there and you could have had a Lotus and you didn't take that opportunity.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
That's something that would haunt you to the grave. It really would. Or maybe it just would haunt me.
Yeah, Scott, are you okay, man?
I love Lotus cars. And, here's one thing. I was reading around in these forums, and this is something that a lot of people maybe haven't noticed. I picked up on this a while back when we were doing our Colin Chapman episode, and it was one of those things that I didn't include in our episode,
mm-hmm.
wished I had, because now I saw it again and reminded me. Have you ever noticed that all Lotus cars start with the letter E? All models of Lotus start with the letter E. Aside from the number vehicles, like the, right. the 11 or the 7.
But the Elise, the Espirit.
Yeah, there's the Esprit, there's the Elise, the Europa, the Siege. They even threw an 11 in there, but they started it with the letter E for 11. The Elan, the Elite. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, there's a few rumors and speculation. You have to look them up because there's many, many versions of this of why that happened. You know, some of them come right down to, you know, Colin Chapman saying that he liked the way that 11 sounded after the word Lotus. Lotus 11. It just seemed to flow off the tongue. Then there's other versions of that. You know, there's a few stories out there. So just look into it if you've got interest in that kind of thing. Probably a longer story than we've got time for here today.
I am going to dig into that. You know, that kind of stuff is really compelling to
me. And this is another Bond car, by the way. We need to mention that.
Otherwise, that's right.
It was the submarine car in The Spy Who Loved Me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, whole story with that one. So,
lest we oversell this vehicle, it is not actually amphibious. So have your expectations lowered.
But you can't oversell a Lotus Elise. A Lotus Esprit is the one we're talking about. Now, Lotus Elise I'm also a fan of.
Yeah.
Elan, 11, all of them.
And this moves us to...
Yeah, we've established that.
Okay. This moves us to the next on the list. What is it?
It is the Porsche 968. Now, the production for the 968 went from 1992 until 1995, so it's a relatively small run of a Porsche vehicle. The price went new, and I just took a 1995 number because that was the end of production. Price was around $39,000 to $52,000. So, again, today's money, that would be about $62,000 to about $83,000. But that's not the price you'll pay today.
Right. That is not the price you will pay today. There are, surprisingly, there's some on eBay right now for under $20,000.
Under $20,000 for a 968. Now, the crazy thing about this is when you look at it, initially you're going to think that is a it's just another 944. I mean, I think just not a Porsche fan, of course. I understand that. There are going to be people that will stand up out of their chair when I say that. Because the 968 only shares 20% of its parts with the 944, even though they do have a similar look. You got to admit that they look similar.
Yeah.
20% part sharing between the 944 and the 968. Hmm. Surprising in my eye.
Yeah, that is.
Go ahead.
Well, it makes sense economically, but it is a surprising stylistic move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are it's a 3-liter, mm-hmm. 236 horsepower. Another front engine, rear wheel drive layout. So you would think that it would share a lot more parts than that with the 944.
And if you get the turbo, that knocks you up to 305.
Yeah, horsepower. Yep, 305. So not bad. I don't know, strong vehicle. I mean, again, I think this is one of those cars that it's just kind of cool to see you own a Porsche for under $20,000.
Yeah, but you can't tell people the price. You just got to tell people that you own a Porsche.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, you know, you've got a Porsche parked in your garage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
That
right?
is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
That makes you the cool guy on the block. It's like, it's kind of like when, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you lived in a neighborhood like this when you were a kid, but it's kind of like when you're a kid and there's that one family that has a pool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're the cool one now.
Oh, sure. Everybody wants to be your friend.
And I got to say, I don't think that cool factor applies as much to this next vehicle.
Oh, Ben, it's understated. It's an understated
it's
vehicle.
It's subtle.
It is, but what do they call it? Like a velvet-wrapped hammer. That's what this one is, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an incredible vehicle. We're talking about the Mercedes-Benz SL600. Specifically, the fourth generation of this vehicle.
Right.
And the reason we're saying specifically that is because that's the one that comes with a 6-liter V12 engine, a lot like we talked about with the Aston Martin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Different engine. This is a Mercedes-built engine. This is actually the same engine that went into the first Pagani Zonda, the C12. I think that was later. That was like I want to say that was in 2000-something when that came around. But we're talking about a car in 1993 that was valued at, get this, Ben, $153,395 in 1993. So if you were to take that to 2017, this is a car that would be adjusted to $258,600 in 2016. And it's offered, a lot of places, eBay or wherever, Craigslist, well under $20,000 now.
Which is insane. And these would be, think of the existing mileage on this, like around 40, 50,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable that the depreciation that happened with these vehicles, and I can't get my head wrapped around this one other than it's the maintenance cost. The maintenance is what's driving people to get rid of these and to say that, you know, they're not valued at what they were. People that own one, you know, want to hang on to it forever, but a lot of people can't afford the upkeep of them.
Now, the thing is, like Mercedes, though, if you take care of the upkeep, they're super durable vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's fine, but you will hear in you read forums, and I read a lot of forums about this car, trying to figure out what it was that make them drop in price so dramatically.
Yeah.
And I can only come up with the maintenance in this situation. And the reason is because a lot of people said, sure, you know, there's the usual stuff, you know, that everybody pays for. There's brakes, there's fluids, there's filters, there's all that stuff, right? You know, just routine maintenance. Maybe a broken windshield here or there. There's always something on this car that requires attention that is above $1,000.
Oh yeah, it's an always something car.
Whenever I take it in, and then the other problem with it is that you can't just take it to, you know, the local shop and you know have them repair it. A lot of these owners said if you want it done right, if you want it to be a lasting good repair, you have to take it to the Mercedes dealership and have them do it because they have the right tools. They have the special tools, they have the knowledge, and you know they're the only ones that can seemingly get this thing back together in the right way every single time. And that, to them, it's worth it to pay, you know, all that. You know, don't want a shoddy repair. And a lot of the things you can't do yourself on this vehicle, it's an exotic engine, really. I mean, when you get right down to it. Mm-hmm. It's an exotic engine. So good luck working on something like this in your garage. That's the other problem. So maintenance is another, it's a huge issue in this. But, man, for under $20,000, that's remarkable.
And that may be one of the most significant price drops we have in the entire list for today.
I think so. I mean, maybe that Aston Martin. Oh, no, the Aston Martin was still valued probably double what this one is valued at. So, yeah, you're probably right.
So, moving on, we go to something that a lot of folks have been waiting for in the audience. Ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, the BMW M3 makes the list as well.
Yeah, now this is one that was produced all through the 1990s. We're talking about specifically the E36 version of the M3. This is the third generation of the 3 Series cars, produced throughout the 1990s, so 1990 to 2000. And, you know, ballpark price when it was brand new, I'm going to say between $39,000 and $45,000. So still expensive, you know, at that time. This is a sports car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a luxury sports car. But sure. But it was desirable. A lot of people wanted a BMW. Of course, it carried with it a name, you know, steeped in heritage, I guess, maybe. I don't know a better way to say it. This car, by the way, just so that you get an idea of how strong this vehicle was, it made Car and Driver's 10 Best list every single year that it was on sale. Every year.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the 1990s, it was always on that top 10 list. They had, you know, several body styles to it. You could get a sedan, you could get a coupe, a convertible, an estate, or, you know, a wagon, I think they call it. In a lot of places, they call it a estate. You could get a hatchback version of this thing even. So it had great variety. It was a strong performer. People still seek this car out.
Yeah, and there is something that we do have to mention, which is not all of these were created equal, right?
Yeah.
Since the U.S. market had a different engine from what you could acquire in Europe. Now we're going to my favorite one. I'm just going to be completely honest.
Sure.
The Dodge Viper. I had no idea you could get one at like this at $40,000.
Oh, Ben, are you forgetting our conversation? I think you're forgetting our conversation. We talked about this in an episode, but it was brief, so maybe that was it. We talked about this taking the place of the Ferrari 308 as our example of a car that you can afford but probably shouldn't buy.
That's right.
Now, but you know, I've been thinking about this, and maybe I'm going to go back on this. I don't know. I'm still undecided about this vehicle, but it's kind of our – I was going to start using this as our go-to car. Again, it was probably only 3 or 4 minute conversation, so I
– But I just keep – you know what it is? I keep getting, like, kid in a candy stored with this thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I keep – I know it's like, I know it's going to be bad for me. I know I'm going to regret it. Yeah. I'll probably be kind of broke for a while.
It'll whisper to you at night that it wants to kill you.
But Scott, it's a Dodge Viper.
I know. And you know what? I see more and more of these things around town now than I think I ever have. I mean, I don't know what the deal is. And there's some new, some old.
It's a siren call. There's something about it. It's hard to resist, man. I'm living one day at a time, and I don't know. You know, I'm on the edge.
I hope you get one. I'd love to see you. I'd love to see you in a Viper sometime soon.
Thanks,
because they're incredible. And the mid-1990s Roadsters are the ones that you can pick up for, you know, a reasonable price. And we say reasonable because... Now, let's get this straight. This is a supercar. It's an American-made supercar. It's brutal. It's not refined. It's more rough around the edges. Is maybe the best way to say it.
Right.
And of course, V10 power. I think it went anywhere from in the early days was like 400 horsepower, and then it eventually climbed to 650 horsepower or more.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the mid-1990s, so we're probably right in that 400-450 range for the price that we're talking about.
Right.
And you can get these. Again, this is the thing with these cars, Ben. You can get them in varying degrees of condition. The problem is that front end. Remember the price of the front end?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to think of a way around this, and maybe that's why I'm reconsidering my pick here for kind of the car that you maybe shouldn't buy. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a Lamborghini-tuned V10 engine. It's all aluminum. The price that we had quoted or we talked about maybe for that hood piece, that single piece that was, I think it's a composite material. I think, do we say it's carbon fiber? I think it's composite. And there's a front clip and then there's headlights and all of that. If you run into anything in a parking lot or another vehicle or, you know, somebody hits you or whatever, it gets very, very expensive. All three of those pieces that I just described, or four, including two headlights, can be around $20,000. So if you rear end somebody, there's a possibility that you're going to walk away with a $20,000 bill for your own vehicle to be repaired. $12,000 to $15,000 of that is for that new single-piece hood. It's an enormous panel, really big. Right around, I think the clip, that front lower clip, the very front end with the grill, that's somewhere ballpark around, $3,000 or $4,000 brand new. And then the headlights, I've heard, are around $500 each. So it gets very expensive very fast. But you can pick up used parts. Much, much lower price. Still expensive, but that's kind of the danger of this vehicle. How easy is it to run into something with a Viper and crack up that front end? I think a lot of the ones that you'll find for sale, in the $30,000 to, let's say, $10,000 range, are already going to have that damage. So you're gonna buy it knowing that you're going to have to invest some money to make it look complete again.
It's fair. It's true. You know what? You're tough, but fair.
Well, but then again, the Viper is the kind of car that I don't care if it has a front end on it. I'm going to drive it and have fun. Even if it's just wide open in front, like the old cars that would run with no hood on them,
Oh, man.
It's a beautiful engine. You should show people, right?
Ah, you're right. I should get one.
You definitely should get one. I'll help you in your search starting today if you'd like.
I feel like I'm not. I feel like I'm tuning out and part of the conversation, and I've got to move on before I get obsessed. All right. And I appreciate your help.
Well, it's a beautiful car.
This could be, we're really close to this being one of those go-kart or goat situations, which, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you've heard this before, if you picked it up, but off the air, I ask my co-host Scott for advice because Scott knows a lot about a lot of things. And,
oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's just an observation. He knows a lot about a lot of things. And so several times we've gotten very, very close to getting a go-kart and renting a goat for lawn maintenance.
You're going to buy a goat.
I was going to, because I couldn't rent one. That's right.
Yeah, you're going to buy one, but then you could rent it to your friends. And so then it's a moneymaker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was the idea.
Yeah. The go-kart's still a good idea, by the way. Doesn't matter what age you are or how long. It doesn't matter. It's a great idea.
It is a great idea. Yeah. And we are going to reveal the last two affordable 90s dream cars after a word from our sponsor.
All right, and we're back, and we're going to wrap up the last two here maybe a little bit quicker because I realize we spent a lot of time on some of the side conversations.
But it was a Viper. Anyway,
yeah,
sorry.
No. And it was a Lotus.
That's in the past. Yeah, I'm here. I'm present.
I understand.
All right. This is the Porsche Boxster 986.
Yeah, specifically the first generation of Boxster. Now, this came around 1996. I think they built them until about 2004. And there are a lot of fans of this design. There are a lot of people that are detractors of this design. They don't like it. They said, you know, what's Porsche doing making this entry level vehicle? How they looked down their nose at, you know, the people that bought the Boxster and said, you know, this shouldn't even be allowed to park at our events. There's that kind of attitude towards this car from a lot of people, and there shouldn't be, really. This is it's a great car. I think I read somewhere, and I hope I'm not mixing this up with the 968, but I thought I had heard that this is Porsche's first all-new vehicle in something like 29 years at that point. Mm. It was a long time. Maybe it wasn't exactly that amount of time, but it was one of the first times they had completely redesigned a vehicle or designed a brand new vehicle from the ground up for a long, long time, decades. But now you can pick up one of these or pick one of these up from around, what did I say, about $10,000, $12,000. That's ballpark. Price brand new, if you wanted to go back to 1997, was between $40,000 and $50,000. So they were pretty expensive back then. That would have been around, you know, $60,000, $75,000, somewhere in there. Had a couple of really great engines, some flat six engines, a 2.5, a 2.7, and then also a 3.2 liter version that you could get. Porsche was in a lot of trouble in the 1990s when this car came around. They were in dire straits, and a lot of people have given credit to the Boxster as the vehicle that brought it back from the brink of a potential sale.
Brink of extinction.
Well, I wouldn't say extinction. I think someone would have bought the brand and continued to make it, but it wouldn't have been... It wouldn't have been Porsche.
I don't think it would have been the same. So I do think it would have been... You're absolutely right, Scott. They did get close to being sold or acquired. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been extinction. I think the only... They would have maybe tried some other things, but mm-hmm. the market probably wouldn't have reacted very well.
Yeah.
Because it would be seen as sort of a counterfeit Porsche. And then they would have to go to, like... legacy revivals to survive.
Well, I give Porsche a lot of credit for creating this vehicle. I mean, I think that it was a smart move at the time. They had a lot of people that were pushing against doing something like mm-hmm. this. And I'm sure that's not just, you know, public opinion. I'm sure there was some pressure from within to not do this. And they went forward with a plan, and it worked out for them. We have a listener named Colin S. from Denver, Colorado, who wrote in a while back about his father's first-generation Boxster. And it's valued right around $12,000 right now.
Yeah.
And that's with 30,000 miles. And he says it's a pristine version of you know, this first-gen Boxster. But he said the problem with it is the maintenance cost. And again, here we are with the maintenance issue, because he said the last oil change that he took it in for, and this is a while back, he said the oil change was about $750. And I'm sure that there's some other, you know, supplemental things that go along with that. It's not just an oil change by any means. But he did also have a major service done recently, you know, whenever this was written, that was something like, it was over $2,000. So there, again, a $2,000 maintenance and a $750 oil change on a car that's only valued at $12,000. After a few times of doing that, you get pretty tired of spending that kind of money at the dealership.
But you'll end up spending more money on oil than you will on the car.
This is the thing, and this is the case with several of these vehicles on this list, is that, and even when it was new, this is it's more true now than ever because the price is lower, but even when it was brand new, Porsche priced this vehicle at a price that was attractive to someone who was, say, mid-20s, has a pretty decent job, you know, not the first job out of college, but, you know, they're kind of on their way to being a career person, got whatever they're, you know, they're focused on their career, want to buy something that's a status symbol. Mm-hmm. This was priced just right for somebody, you know, 25 to 30 years old, maybe a little bit older, but the problem was you couldn't afford to maintain it, and the maintenance is something that is so critical. So a lot of these you'll find are in really bad shape. You can find some that are in just horrific condition because the owner never took care of it. They could afford the payments, couldn't afford the maintenance.
So if we want to do a silver lining on this, if you're looking for a project car, you could consider this a project car.
Yeah, but understand that whoever you buy it from, you might want to do a little profiling and see how they handle other things. Are they, you know, they have a well-manicured lawn? Do they, how about their other vehicles? Is it in good shape as well? Check stuff like that out. Ask them about receipts. Do you have a lot of receipts?
Mm-hmm. Ask them if they've kept a log, a maintenance log.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which they may or may not have. But you can learn more about the art and science of getting a good deal in a used car by checking out our earlier episode, episodes, excuse me, on that. And you can also check out how to find out whether your mechanic is on the up and up.
Nice tying that one in, Ben.
I'm working for it. I think sometimes I reference too many past episodes, but it feels like the fastest way to get the information to you folks is just to say, usually if it sounds like Scott and I have glossed over a particular thing, we have an episode waiting for you on carstuffshow.com that goes maybe into too much detail about it, right?
Man, you are selling it today, and I like it. That's
Hey, thanks.
Nice work.
I wanted to ask our super producer to toss a drum roll in for our final vehicle. That was perfect.
Yeah, just right.
That was perfect.
Every time.
Every time. The final vehicle is the Mitsubishi 3000 GT.
Yeah, okay, well, this is going to end with a tremendous coincidence, I'll tell you that. But I'll tell you about that in just a minute. Now, in the 1990s, there was Mitsubishi created a vehicle called the 3000 GT. There was another vehicle that was similar that was the Dodge Stealth. But this is the Mitsubishi version of this one. And specifically, in this article, they listed as being a competitor to vehicles like the Toyota Supra or even the Acura NSX. This one that we're talking about is the top-of-the-line, all-wheel-drive 3000 GT VR4, and I think that was right. I want to say that this is one that was produced specifically in 1999, the one that they're talking about, the VR4 version.
Yeah.
The thing is, Ben, these can be found for under $15,000 now, which is really, really good. Excellent price. Now, the VR4 sold for, in 1999, it sold for around anywhere between $25,000 and $45,000. You know what? I'm going to amend this. I'm going to say that that was probably $25,000 for the standard 3000 GT. The $45,000 would have been the VR4 version, I would guess. And here's where this amazing coincidence comes in, right? Now, okay. It's a beautiful looking car. A lot of people can agree that, I think most people can agree. It has the looks of a 1990s, I wouldn't say supercar, but a sports car, definitely.
And
right?
It was also ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it had a lot of advancements that other cars just weren't offering. Mm-hmm. At the time. So it's an incredible vehicle. It really is. The one that we're talking about in specific, this VR4, for the year 1999, only 274 of these were sold or imported to the United States. So they're a rare bird by all means, right? Mm-hmm. Tough to find them. So I was reading this, I was following this link from this is from a Road and Track article that we're following along with. But Jalopnik had an article about this. And the guy that wrote about it, I think his name is, the author that wrote about it, his name is Freddie Hernandez. It was over at Jalopnik. And he bought one of these. And he has a separate thing that he runs called, I think it's called like the Art of the Flip.
Oh, okay.
Where he buys cars and
flips
documents
them.
What he does to them and how much he sells them for. And,
oh, cool.
Kind of tracks the progress of it. It's an interesting thing to read. Again, called Art of the Flip. And one of the vehicles was one of these, what he calls a super rare 3000 GT VR4, and he bought it, I forget when he bought it, it was a while back, mm-hmm. But he wrote in his article, and again, you'll have to look this up online in Jalopnik, but he wrote at the very end of it, when he's documenting like the arrival of this and the excitement over buying and everything, he says, you can check these out on eBay, and here's a link, but good luck finding a 1999 VR4. So I thought, all right, well, I'll just look at this on eBay and see what the prices are. So I click on it, and the very first vehicle on the list was a 1999 VR4. It was the same color as the one that he owned and he was writing about in this article. So I thought, well, that's really weird. And I looked at it, and I opened the listing on eBay.
Yeah, open the page.
And in the description, it says, this is the exact same car that Freddie Hernandez documented in his Jalopnik car. He said, that's why the photos are the exact same. This is the same car that was owned by him. And the auction had 5 hours left in it. That's how close I was to missing this. So last night I looked at it. It ended at midnight. I don't know what it eventually sold for, but it was on sale in Roseville, California. And of course, I think, Mr. Hernandez lives in New Jersey, so it made its way to Roseville, California, and it was, with 5 hours remaining, it was for sale for $16,200. Not a bad price considering what you're getting. I mean, if you read about the VR4 in specific, you'll understand what I mean, but even the standard 3000 GT, if you can call it standard, was an incredible vehicle and very highly sought after. A lot of people wanted this car back in the day.
Well said, my friend. Well said, and I completely agree. I'm a little bit dumbfounded by the coincidence, but I guess those things happen.
You know, I did this. This is funny. I thought there's no way that was happening. Like, I'm not seeing what I'm seeing because this article was written years ago. I'm just tracking it now for this episode that we just happened to decide on, you know, recording this week, and then it just happens to be the very first listing with 5 hours left in the auction. Way too much of a coincidence, but it's true. It really did happen. And I tried to find it today. I tried to go back, and I wish I had, you know, saved the listing number because I could check out what it eventually sold for, but I neglected to do that yesterday, so I don't know. But 16.2 was the last bid on it, again, with 5 hours left. And it's just a crazy coincidence, but stuff like that sometimes happens.
You know, yeah.
Describing it's difficult and arduous sometimes, but but I hopefully got there.
And this will conclude our list for today, which means we are looking for your help, folks. Write to us and let us know if there's something that we should add to the list.
Yeah.
Another affordable 1990s dream car.
Yeah, this is Road and Tracks list, and to be honest, I tried to, you know, search the recesses of my memory for something.
Yeah.
Something that was, you know, expensive then, would be affordable now, and this list really covers a lot of them. So it mm-hmm. did a great job. I didn't want to add a whole lot to it. I could think of maybe one, like the BMW M Coupe, maybe.
Hey, not bad.
Yeah, it was expensive. It was like $46,000 back in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're going for now. I think, you know, ballpark $20,000.
Huh.
So half of that price.
We also have one more order of business, Scott. I think you know what it is.
What's that?
I'm going to pitch it right now. First reaction. Dylan the Lotus Fagan.
Oh, why? Anything with Lotus in it has to stay.
I'm kind of leveraging that.
You know what would be better is if his name started with E or ended with E. Well, it has to have an E in there somewhere.
Yeah. Dylan Elotus?
No, I mean if his name, like Ethan or something.
Right.
It didn't work out.
All right, so what about Tristan? We've got, you know how in Atlanta there's Outkast, right?
Yeah.
Don't look over at him.
No, I'm seeing his reaction. He's
so
fearful.
There's Andre 3000.
Okay.
And I think using numbers for nicknames is really cool. So what if he's Tristan 3000 McNeil?
All right. It works.
It's acceptable?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not my best work.
What do you think? You agree? But, or are we getting the thumbs up?
We got a thumbs up.
All right. So
we got a thumbs up. And it felt like a sincere thumbs up.
Yeah. We'll discuss that later.
Yeah, so write to us and let us know what other vehicles you think should be added on the list. And I'm also interested to see what vehicles are out now that you think will be classics or dream cars in the future.
Yeah, because this is going back a long way. We're talking some, you know, cars that could be as old as 27 years old at this point, or mm-hmm. Or 17. But yeah, again, this is another one of those kind of like forecast the future type of, you know, ideas that maybe try to determine right now what's going to be worth about half as much or even less in the future. That's something that's expensive right now that you might be able to afford. But I like the idea of going back and finding a 1990s car something that you desired back then that you want now. Something that was considered not exotic, but something that was unattainable back then.
Right.
And that was the problem I had is, again, it's a good list. But I'm sure that we're forgetting, you know, there's probably 100 other cars that we were just not coming up with.
Sure.
Top of the mind.
Easily.
Yeah. So love our listeners to write in and tell us what they think.
And you can, as we said, find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, where we are CarStuffHSW, and cover a lot of things that, for one reason or another, don't make it onto the air. Or you can write to us directly. We are
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.